produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. This is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, harm reduction and the regulation of drugs. The 6th European Harm Reduction Conference was held recently in Warsaw, Poland. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, we're going to hear portions of a satellite event held at the close of the conference, entitled Dealing with Drugs 2, Cities and the International Pursuit of Sensible Regulation. Let's start with the mayor of the city of Amsterdam, Femke Halsema.
I would like to start this conference with the stories of Mohammed and Andres. Mohammed was from Amsterdam. In 2018, he was working as an intern at a local community center when two men with machine guns came in and took his life. They had mistaken him for somebody else. Mohammed was 17 years old. Andres was from Colombia. He grew up in a poor neighborhood in the city Quibdó. To earn money, he collected waste for recycling. One day, he crossed an invisible border marking local gang turf. For this, the gang brutally attacked and murdered him with machetes. Andres was 12 years old. Two young boys, children, who despite the challenges of their environment, resisted the criminal path. Yet unknowingly and unwillingly, they crossed paths with ruthless drug criminals, and it cost them their lives. From the Netherlands to Colombia, from Brussels to Warsaw, the international drugs trade has left deep wounds in our societies. Wounds that, after decades of waging a war on drugs, have only deepened. For Mohammed and Andres, a solution will come too late. But to all others that are still trapped in this system, we owe it to find an alternative. That is why we are here today, at this crucial conference, organized in collaboration, and was already mentioned, with the Correlation Harm Reduction Network. The impact of the drug trade is profound. Human rights are being violated by criminals and governments, and the uncontrolled production of drugs brings severe environmental damage. In our cities, neighborhoods are being destabilized and corrupted by the influence of criminal money, and our streets witness the tragic reality of daytime murders like the death of Mohammed and Andres I just described. We face a broad systemic problem of outdated and ineffective drug policies. Despite decades of repressive drug control policies, the global supply of cocaine is at record levels according to the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. For too long, the war on drugs has dominated our approach, draining law enforcement resources and failing to effectively reduce the risk and harms that result from the uncontrolled production, trafficking, and unsafe use of drugs. It is time for change. And that change starts with those, like you here, who are willing to approach the issue with an open mind and a caring heart, with us. This event, Dealing with Drugs Part 2, serves as a follow-up, as you probably already understood, of the Dealing with Drugs conference I hosted in Amsterdam in January, nearly a year ago, where we did not debate the question if regulation is necessary, but focused on how it can be designed and implemented. Today's conference focuses on the question how cities and international organizations can work together to take the next steps towards a new approach. This question is not just a theoretical inquiry, but a call to action, a demand for practical solutions, and it is an invitation for cities and for international politicians and organizations to connect and lead the way in shaping humane and effective drug policies. Cities can serve as a breeding ground for new drug policies. Small experiments can make big changes. They can be proof of concept. They can show how regulation can be designed and implemented at a local level. We need experiments that show that the whole range of the drugs market can be controlled. Production, trade, quality control, health and risk care, prevention and harm reduction. Cities obviously cannot do this alone. To experiment, they need the goodwill and the help of their national governments and international organizations such as the United Nations. By connecting to them, acknowledging together the need for change, momentum may occur, even against all political odds that we face nowadays. And I'm not mentioning the United States.
That was the mayor of the city of Amsterdam, Femke Halsema, speaking at the 6th European Harm Reduction Conference at a satellite event entitled Dealing with Drugs 2, Cities and the International Pursuit of Sensible Regulation. Let's hear now from Volker Türk, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights.
The so-called war on drugs has destroyed countless lives and damaged entire communities. We have record numbers of drug-related deaths, more people than ever with drug use disorders, and higher levels of the illegal production of many drugs. Criminalization and prohibition have failed to reduce drug use and failed to deter drug-related crime. These policies are simply not working, and we are failing some of the most vulnerable groups in our societies. We need a transformative approach, and the international guidelines on human rights and drug policy provide a framework for developing human rights-based approaches that prioritize health, dignity, and inclusion. Instead of punitive measures, we need gender-sensitive and evidence-based drug policies grounded in public health. Instead of scapegoating, we must ensure inclusive access to voluntary medical care and other social services. Harm reduction measures which prevent drug overdose-related fatalities are essential. Decriminalization is another crucial step towards a more humane and effective drug policy, accompanied by support for social reintegration. We need to start treating the person, not punishing the drug use disorder. At the same time, responsible regulation should aim to take control of illegal drug markets and eliminate profits from illegal trafficking, criminality and violence. There's no one-size-fits-all approach to responsible regulation, but collaboration is crucial. Events like this are so important. Gathering city leaders, municipalities, civil society and experts from across Europe and indeed the world to share best practices and expertise. Most importantly, communities, youth and people who use drugs must be included in this process. Historically, people who use drugs are marginalized, criminalized, discriminated against, and left behind, very often stripped of their dignity and their rights. We are destined to fail unless we ensure their genuine participation in formulating and implementing drug policy. Distinguished participants, the evidence is clear. The so-called war on drugs has failed completely and utterly. It is long past time for a new approach. Drug policies that prioritize health and human rights are more effective and more humane. Focusing on inclusion and education over incarceration means that drug consumption falls. Choosing social reintegration over stigmatization means that drug-related infections decrease. And prioritizing people over punishment means more lives are saved. You have my full support in advancing transformative drug policies that center on human rights, prioritize health, protect people, and contribute to more just and more equal societies.
That was Volker Türk, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, speaking at the 6th European Harm Reduction Conference at a satellite event entitled Dealing with Drugs 2, Cities and the International Pursuit of Sensible Regulation. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Welcome back. Now, let's get back to the 6th European Harm Reduction Conference and Dealing with Drugs 2, Cities and the International Pursuit of Sensible Regulation. Another speaker at this event was Neil Woods, a former UK police officer and undercover drugs operative, currently on the board of the Law Enforcement Action Partnership.
I remember when I sort of was dipping my toes into this movement and trying to learn about it, I had to learn quickly. But I remember at the time, I would say 2014, 2015, there was an internal debate in the movement about whether we should completely support just decriminalisation or whether we should also support regulation. And there was many fears about regulation. But things have changed a lot since then. Things have changed around the world, and this movement is under attack like never before. And also, back in 2014-15, we didn't really have the phrase safe supply in our debate, not really. But that's become part of the debate. And safe supply, of course, really relies on regulation, and that's what we're talking about. Now, we've heard, of course, and our movement should be led by human rights and health. Yes, of course, I accept that. But we also need to consider the other audiences. We also need to consider who else we need to convince. Because this movement is under attack, we have the growth of authoritarian politics, which is attacking our movement. I mean, harm reduction is even under attack in Canada, right? That's a sign that we have some difficulties. One of the reasons why there is the rise of this authoritarian style of politics is because of the fear of crime. This is a genuine part of the reason why politics are shifting that way. Now, crime has actually been falling for decades, for 40 years. It's been falling everywhere. It's been falling in jurisdictions which believe in deterrence, and it's been falling in jurisdictions which believe in social justice approaches to crime. It's been falling everywhere. So not everybody can be right. Crime is falling everywhere. However, in recent years, the fear of crime has increased, and it's increasing dramatically. And one of the significant reasons for that fear of crime is the growing crime in our communities from the drug markets. Because the crime from drug markets is of a dramatic nature which causes people significant fear. The idea of children dealing drugs, the violence, the use of firearms, and also the intimidation of communities, which comes from the growing power of organised crime. And actually, I predict that we have come to the end of the period of time where crime is falling. I predict that because there are certain things happening in our communities related to the growing power of organised crime, which to me suggests crime is going to start climbing. And of course, in many places in the global south, they haven't quite had the same privilege in the reduction in crime anyway. So with that in mind, we as a movement, as a broader drug law reform movement, as well as this space of harm reduction, we need to start advocating wholeheartedly for regulation. And we need to regulate, we need to advocate not just for human rights, not just to protect the health of people, but because many of the audiences that we need to address actually don't care so much about those things, they care about crime. And actually, the best way to beat organized crime is legal regulation. Prohibition gave birth to organized crime. It is what makes it powerful. And the mechanisms of trying to police the drug markets through prohibition is actually what makes organized crime efficient. Drugs policing sharpens the sword of organized crime. I'll give you an example from my own experience, and forgive me if some of you have heard this one before, but When I used to work undercover, one of the later operations I did was to infiltrate an infamous gang in the UK called the Burger Bar Boys. Now, as I travel around the world, some people think that's a very British name for a gang. It doesn't sound very scary, does it? The Burger Bar Boys. But they weren't the most notorious gang in the UK at the time. A few months before I did this operation, they'd machine-gunned two young women as part of a battle with their rivals, the Johnson Crew. They were infamous for murders, for open warfare in the streets. And so it was a pressure environment to go into. I used the tactics that I'd developed over many years, which meant finding vulnerable people who use drugs to manipulate. And in fact, I would look for the most vulnerable people to manipulate, because vulnerable people are easier to manipulate. And if that sounds ruthless, well, of course it's ruthless. That is the nature of covert policing in the realm of prohibition. That is what we are tasking our police to do, to police vulnerable people and to use them to this end. So I went into the community of Northampton and I found my people to manipulate. I spent time with them. I went shoplifting, which was fantastic fun, I have to say. Genuinely, I knew I wasn't going to go to jail, so it was probably more fun for me than them. But, you know, I spent a lot of time developing a reputation so that I could stand the test of the introduction to this gang. And I'd spent many years infiltrating different gangs and spending time with organized crime, but this gang was particularly terrifying. Every single day, I felt in fear. Every single moment I spent in their time. One day, they essentially kidnapped me and stripped me at gunpoint to test me. They said, you're 5-0, man. You're 5-0, you're heat. Meaning Hawaii 5-0, street slang for police, etc. And the funniest things go through your mind, or go through my mind when I've got that adrenaline fueling my brain. When he was saying you're 5-0, I looked at him thinking, you're not old enough to have watched Hawaii 5-0. And when one of them lifted his T-shirt to show me the gun to make it clear I was going to do what I was told, I looked at this gun in the top of his tracksuit bottoms and I thought, how on earth is that tracksuit bottoms holding that gun up? So the strange things went through my mind. But after 7 months of thinking I was going to die on multiple occasions, 7 months, I remember looking we had a safe location, secret location where the operation was being run from. And I remember looking at these whiteboards. And if you've ever seen a police drama where the police construct a case and you have all the photographs and the lines going between, it's exactly like that. I mean, it is exactly like that. And I looked at all the names and all of the evidence that we'd got. And we'd got evidence against 96 different people. The six main gangsters and all of their support people, people that they were exploiting to do the work, the runners, sex workers working for them, had evidence against all of these people. And I remember looking at this board thinking, wow, this is going to sweep the town clean. This is going to be so dramatic. It's going to have such an impact. This is the biggest job I've done. There were police brought in from all of the surrounding counties, hundreds and hundreds of police involved. It was an enormous operation, the resources extraordinary. And I remember speaking to the intelligence cell officer after the dust had settled, everyone was arrested, all of the searches were done. And he says, yep, we managed to interrupt the drug supply for a full 2 hours. 7 months of work, being quite convinced I was going to die on multiple occasions, all of those resources, all of that work, all of that energy, for the sake of interrupting the drug supply for 2 hours. Now, that futility hit me. But futility would be bad enough, but it goes much deeper than that. Because this is a pattern that's repeated everywhere, all over the world. Now I travel the world, I speak to police all over the world, and they have the same stories wherever you are in the world. It doesn't have any impact. But it's worse than that, because there's a lot of energy going into this from the police, a lot of energy. Now, if you consider that whatever the police activity is, whether it's a search warrant, a drug seizure, an arrest of an individual, a kingpin, arrest of a gang, it doesn't reduce the size of the market And I think it's important to see it in those economic terms. The size of the market is not reduced. But every activity has a response, right? Creates a response. So all of that energy going from the police, it must do something. What does it do? It changes the shape of that market. And what that means is that if you've created a gap in the market, you might have upset one gang by arresting them, but you've made another gang very happy because you've created an opportunity. And actually, there are many elements of organised crime which use the police system, the police informant system, in order to get rid of rivals, because quite often it's easier than shooting them. And the police are inadvertently, sometimes, the tools of the police in order to achieve that. But what it means is the market is constantly changing shape. And it's not an improving shape. Because a Darwinian situation is created where the people who are willing to be the most ruthless are the ones who succeed. They are the ones who win that battle for the gap in the market. So over time, the activity of policing these markets is constantly making our communities more violent. This increased violence from the drug markets is increasing the fear of crime, which is in contradiction to the fact that crime is falling for now. But there are other impacts as well, because by constantly disrupting the market, we are making organised crime adapt. And there's an interesting phrase that senior police will often use. They certainly use it a lot in the UK. They use it in different European countries. They say that we have a duty to disrupt the drug markets. We have a duty to disrupt the activities of organised crime. Well, if you go to a business lecture in a university on economics and business, you will have a business academic who will say that the secret to market growth is to disrupt a market. So police leaders are unironically stating that they are disrupting a market, a never shrinking market, bear in mind. Therefore, they are creating market growth. They are creating market opportunity, market innovation, to use more business language. Only regulation is the antidote to this. Only regulation. Only by taking control back. But there are also some sinister things that are coming out of the constant adaptation of organised crime. And one of those is the exploitation of children. Now, the UK is the leading place in Europe for the exploitation of children. Go UK. We have 50,000 children being exploited in the heroin and crack cocaine markets. This is now also starting to happen in Sweden. It's also now starting to happen in the south of France. But it happens where there is the most punitive and aggressive policing practices in the drug market, where there is more regulation, like regulated heroin in Switzerland and the Netherlands, there's not such a risk of child exploitation. So there is a real-time piece of evidence that regulation protects our young better than prohibition. We need to look what works, and we need to expand on it. Most importantly, or the drug I think is the most important to regulate, is cocaine. Because of the return on investment that's created through the cocaine market, the profits are the most significant in the way that it's trafficked. Another significant adaptation of organised crime is corruption. And we need to talk about corruption very carefully. Because where police also change the shape of organised crime is we are creating monopolies. Because if you get rid of one gang, another gang can expand to take up that opportunity. And that is what's happening. That is what has been happening for the last few decades. We now have a situation where transnational organised crime is monopolised, or they have cooperated to become more efficient. And because they are monopolising, it means that they have a control of a greater amount of disposable income. And when organised crime increase their disposable income, they always invest it in corruption. Always. Our systems are being corrupted. And the mechanism which has enabled organised crime to be more effective at corrupting our systems is the policing of the drug markets. By trying harder, we're speeding up the process of corruption. So when you hear a politician saying, oh, we just need to get tougher, we need more police, we need more warrants, we need to arrest more people, the end result is more violence and more corruption. Direct sequence of events. And of course, what that means for the climate crisis is that the most important thing for the climate crisis is good governance. Because if you're signing a treaty to stop deforestation, that signature means nothing if you don't control your own systems, if you don't control your own backyard. And organized crime have corrupted those systems. We now have narco states in some of the most ecologically sensitive parts of the world. But that is just one facet of how corruption is a threat, and it's a growing threat. We are seeing the destruction of the state of Ecuador on an almost daily basis at the moment. It will join other narco states like Honduras, Guinea-Bissau, Guinea, Senegal, various places that organized crime genuinely control. It's growing, and it's transnational. So, as a movement, I think it's important to note that this is a moment in time. The leadership of the mayor, to talk about this from a city perspective, is a moment for all of us to actually become more empowered in this debate. Because to talk about it from a city point of view means that we all have more of an opportunity to actually engage with the politics. Because many of you have connections, either primary or secondary connections, to local government, to local governance. And this movement can grow if we start to look at this from a local politics perspective. And all of you can now think, oh, okay, who can I speak to that's connected to politics? Who can I talk with about this so that our movement grows in support of regulation?
That was Neil Woods, a former UK police officer and undercover drugs operative, speaking at the 6th European Harm Reduction Conference at a satellite event entitled Dealing with Drugs 2, Cities and the International Pursuit of Sensible Regulation. And for now, that's it. Thanks for joining us. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McAvey. Free Culture Radio is a volunteer production for Community Radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's Audio Port Service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Free Culture Radio is available as a podcast or direct download. Links are at the website kboo.fm/freeculture, along with an archive of past shows. Theme music for Free Culture Radio is composed and performed by Tom Nickel and Four Dimensional Nightmare and is used with permission of the artist. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVey saying so long. So long!